All your favorite CBC podcasts are now available on YouTube. The best in award-winning true crime investigations, hilarious comedies, vibrant pop culture conversations, and even more audio series are all available on CBC Podcast's YouTube channel. You'll also find exclusive video first episodes, YouTube shorts, and behind-the-scenes content from our hosts and producers that you can't find anywhere else. So if YouTube is your go-to source for podcasts, just search CBC Podcasts and hit subscribe, and you'll never miss the latest update.
This is a CBC podcast.
Hey, I'm Tom Power. Welcome to Q. Do you remember, like, I don't know how old you are, but if you're like around my age, maybe in your 30s or 40s, do you remember hearing Sum 41 for the first time? It was like 2001. All Killer No Filler had just come out. It was fun, dangerous teenage music. It made you want to go on a road trip, but of course you couldn't go on a road trip, so instead you took your friend who had their license to go to Wendy's, Tim Hortons, and you hung out in the parking lot eating Frosties. Anyway, it sounded like this. Shout out Wendy's, Tim Hortons parking lots, by the way. Two decades later, Sum 41 has just released their eighth and final album. It's called Heaven and Hell, representing two different sides of the band. One, the pop punk side you're hearing right now on In Too Deep, and another sort of heavy metal sound that they've been experimenting with over the years. Today, you're going to hear a song from the Hell side of the record. And we asked Derek Whibley, the longtime frontman, principal songwriter of Sum 41, to talk a little bit about it. But here's the thing. Derek has been, to himself, thinking about ending Sum 41 for years now. So we asked if he would come in and talk a little bit about the record, a little bit about how he knew it was going to be the band's final album, how he told the band. But yeah, we started with when he was making this record, he didn't even know that it was going to be the band's final album. I asked him about that.
Yeah, it didn't dawn on me till the whole record was finished and I listened back to the whole thing. I mean, I'd been having thoughts of, would I do something different someday? Would I ever leave Sum 41? Will I always be this, you know, always doing Sum 41? Because the thing is, being in this band is, it really is a full-time job. You can't just do it half the time. It's from when I wake up till I go to sleep. That's all I'm thinking about and working on. And you were constantly on tour or we're in the studio. And it's a cycle that always repeats. And it's something that I've always loved. But I've always had these thoughts and desires and, you know, wondering, will I ever do something else? Do I have more to offer in life? And I knew that I could never jump into something else and take my focus off Sum 41. I would always have to end it and move on to something else. And I never knew when that day would come. And it dawned on me once this record was finished, and I sat back and I listened to it and I thought, this to me feels like the work is complete now. This is everything, this double record, one side pop punk, one side heavier. From beginning to end, it encapsulates everything musically we've tried to do over the years, everything I've always wanted to do. It's kind of like the record I've always wanted to make. And it feels like it just wraps up the whole thing. And even the title Heaven and Hell doesn't just represent each side musically or sonically. It kind of encapsulates the entire journey of Sum 41, because that's what our whole career has been. It's been up and down, extreme highs, extreme lows. And it just kind of felt like this says it all. So now I think this is the time I can walk away and try something else.
I get it. You listen back to it and it kind of puts a period on the sentence. Only talk about this as much as you want to, but I'm curious, like, so you have this realization.
Yep.
How do you feel when it's time to tell the band? How do you tell the band?
That took me a while too. Like I said, I had these thoughts and I had these thoughts for about 5 years before I even allowed myself to really accept them as something that I could potentially do, because every time I had these thoughts of maybe doing something else, I would bury them and say, stop thinking like that. You're in Sum 41. This is all you're ever going to do. This is, you know, you're lucky to be doing this. Stop thinking about wanting to do anything else. And I would push those thoughts away. So when I came to the realization and thought, you know, it's okay to want to try something else. And I had this thought of like, okay, this is going to be the last record. Now, how do I tell the guys? I sat on that for almost a year. Oh. Or even, you know, 8 months or 9 months, and finally decided I have to say something. because we're starting to talk about putting out a tour, you know, and releasing, coming out with a release date for the album, and all this stuff started moving ahead. And I just realized if I'm going to make this the last record and the last tour, I got to say something. So I eventually did. And I think it was tough, but actually not. I mean, it was tough to bring it up, but it wasn't a tough conversation to have once it started going. As surprised as everybody was, it was actually a really loving and supportive conversation with everybody, because we've just grown so much. We're in a different place with each other, personally, professionally. You know, it felt like more like a family. I didn't feel attacked or like nobody. There's no arguing. There was nothing. It was just like, if that's how you feel, then we love you. We support you. Then, you know, we'll, as much as we want to continue, like, we understand. We got it.
I don't know why I'm hung up on this, but was it over Zoom or was it in person?
No. So I kept thinking, what's the best way to do this? So I felt the best way, since I know the guys so well, that I was going to write out an email of everything. A detailed email of everything I wanted to say and why I felt this way. And at the very end of it, I said, I want you to sit with this for a couple of days, talk to your families, and just live with this. And then let's all get on the phone individually, one at a time, so we can just freely talk. Mm. Because the reason why I want to do that is because, sure, we all get on a Zoom, there's five of us, and I say this whole thing, and somebody feels compelled, they got to say something, and they don't know, they haven't fleshed out their own thoughts yet, but they feel like they got to say something. And then somebody just kind of like agrees because they don't want to, you know, it just puts too much pressure on people. So I wanted people to get it. I wanted to be able to articulate everything I wanted to say. I didn't want to stumble on any words or forget to say something, and have everybody just live with it. And so let's have a rational conversation a couple of days later, once you've had time to soak it in, and let's talk individually, so you don't feel the pressure of anybody else or having to say anything that, you know, it just gave everybody a free moment.
Yeah. When the last conversation was had, when you had the sort of final one-on-one conversation, and so the conversations were kind of over and the decision was made, how did you feel?
I felt sad. But I felt good. I felt like this is something that I knew in my heart that I wanted to do and that I had to do. But of course, it's sad. You know, it's even though we're not, it's not a bitter breakup, that maybe makes it even more sad, is because we all really care about each other. It'd probably be easier if we were mad and angry and hated each other and we're just like never wanted to see each other again. But it's not that way. We're going to stay very close. I think we're probably going to talk just as much or even more outside of the band, you know?
What about you as an artist, as a songwriter, as a musician? Do you feel like relief? Like, okay, I can move on. Is there panic? Like, oh my God, I got to figure out something else to do here.
I think it's a bit of everything. For me, I work better when I have some sort of urgency or some fear or something some obstacles I gotta push against, or I need to figure stuff out. Like, I don't do as well when things are a little bit predictable or safer or easier. And not that 41 is predictable and safe and easy, but there is some predictability to it, of doing an album, a tour, and an album and a tour. And there's something, you know, the cyclical nature of it all. I like the idea of like, oh shit, now what do I do? Because for a long time, that's what Sum 41 has been. There's been ups and downs, and you have to fight through things, and there's barriers and walls and gatekeepers and proving yourself over again. And sometimes it's great, and sometimes you have momentum on your side, and sometimes people are like not interested in anything that we have to say. You know, radio can be tough, or sometimes tickets don't sell, and you're in a bad place. You know, there's just things you got to work against. We've been out of that for a long time, and things have been great for a long time, and I'm so thankful for that. But you know, I feel like at this age, I'm just looking for something different, and I don't know what that is yet. It may not even be music. I don't know.
Yeah, you think it's something else?
I have no idea. I won't know that until I'm faced with. Once I remove the safety net and I wake up and I don't have Sum 41 to focus on, and I'm forced to think of something, find something I'm passionate about, that's when it'll appear. I'll start gravitating towards something that my heart wants to do. It might be music. It might be another band. I might do something solo. I might write a TV show. I have no idea.
I'm just saying, if the 22 minutes people are listening, maybe, I think Derek could be into it. I'm Tom Power. You're listening to Q. You're in the middle of my conversation with the front person and principal songwriter of the legendary Canadian pop punk band, Sum 41. I think the music we listen to when we're teenagers and we're learning to like question our parents and question teachers is really, really important music, you know? And Sum 41 was that to a lot of people, you know, myself included, like spent a lot of time being offered cigarettes while listening to Fat Lip, drinking your first beer while listening to In Too Deep. This music is really important to people. And I was sort of surprised when I asked Derek Whibley about like the following they have and the emotional reaction people have to Sum 41's music. He didn't answer it the way I expected. Take a listen.
Oh, I was shocked, to be honest. I wasn't sure that when we were about to make the announcement the night before, I got asked, are you nervous? And I was like, yeah, I am, actually. And they're like, well, what are you nervous about? And I said, I don't know if anyone's going to care, to be honest. I feel like this almost might be a little of an embarrassing announcement. I felt like, of course, the hardcore fans would be bummed out. But I thought beyond that, I thought people would kind of say, well, so? You know, who cares?
Really?
Or, yeah, I really did. And I thought some people would say, really? I thought they broke up 10 years ago.
Right.
That was what I was thinking. And I was shocked and blown away by the reaction from not only the fans, but just beyond that. And it was the first time I'd actually heard stories of how much the band and songs and albums have meant to people. Because people started writing in a lot of comments and just like really deep, meaningful stories about how certain songs and albums had impacted their lives at certain points. And I found that really touching, but also like, I had no idea, like no one had ever told me that before, you know? So it's just,
no one had ever told you that, like they grew up, you know, skipping school, listening to In Too Deep, or like went to camp and drank for the first time in the woods, listening to Fat Lip or anything like that?
Not really. I mean, sure, maybe here and there at a show or something and you meet some fans, but like not an outpouring of people writing and stuff. Like, I just didn't know it meant that much to people. Maybe, you know, every couple of years you might hear from somebody who say, oh yeah, man, I used to listen to you guys and love that in high school. It doesn't really go much deeper than that. These were like really deep, and people were coming up to me, stopping me on the street if I ran into anybody and like telling me real stories of impact in their lives. I'd never heard that before.
I hope you could take that in, you know?
Oh, I do take it in. I mean, unfortunately, the announcement is made. And the decision
oh, yeah, right.
Has been,
I don't mean like that.
I'm changing it, but it was very, very heartwarming and touching. And like I said, shocking and surprising.
So let's talk a little bit about Heaven and Hell. So as you mentioned, the Heaven side is full of pop punk music. The Hell side is sort of the heavier, more metal side of Sum 41.
Yeah.
How has your relationship to those two genres like evolved over the years of the band?
It's interesting because I still remember when we were putting out the early stuff and we had metal influenced tracks, or we would talk about our love for Iron Maiden and Slayer and Metallica. Heavy metal is how we were raised. Maiden free. We're the gods that we pray. Gods we like having fun at other people's expense. In those days, in the early days, music genres were much more separated. They aren't anymore.
Yeah.
But they were back then. And people thought that was really strange. And when we started playing on some of the heavier festivals, and we were the only pop punk band on some of these festivals, a lot of people looked at us as strange.
Like you were playing the same festivals as like Iron Maiden or Slayer or some kind of like.
Yeah, Slayer. Yeah. Like we'd go on right before Slayer. We'd be sandwiched in between heavy bands and, you know, System of a Down and us and Slayer and stuff like that. Metallica actually asked us to go on tour with them on the St. Anger tour.
Wow. And
we didn't do it mostly because we felt honored to be asked, but it was right when Does This Look Infected was coming out, and we had our own headlining tour planned, and it was our first time in arenas, and timing wasn't working out.
Yeah.
And we would have been first on versus like headlining arenas on our own. So we were just kind of like, we got to take our own moment here, as great as that is.
Yeah,
but
yeah, I get
anyways,
it. Yeah.
You know, and it was just, but it was an odd time because people thought it was strange that we were doing this metal thing. Whereas now it's just totally accepted. And I think it took us 20 years to be able to put out a record like this where nobody thinks it's that weird. Everyone's like, oh yeah, that makes sense that Sum 41 would do this. And I think it took us 20 years to build that.
I'm Tom Power. You're listening to Q. More of my conversation with Derek Whibley of Sum 41 after this.
Hi, I'm Willa Paskin, the host of Decoder Ring, Slate's podcast about cracking cultural mysteries. On Decoder Ring, we dive down rabbit holes and obsessively explore questions hiding in plain sight. Like, why has slow dancing gone out of style? And when did we all become obsessed with hydration? And where did the word mullet, you know, to describe a hairstyle, come from? That's Decoder Ring, named one of the best podcasts of 2023 by the New York Times. Listen to new episodes every 2 weeks and make sure to follow us so you never miss one.
This is sort of a strange question, but does one feel truer to you as a songwriter? Like, does the metal side of the record feel truer to you than the pop punk side of Sum 41?
No, they both feel the same to me. I just write stuff that I feel passionate about, and I pick up a guitar and start writing riffs. Sometimes they're heavier riffs. Sometimes they're more pop punk. I mean, I can sort of tell myself to go down a path like I did originally with this pop punk stuff. Like I wasn't trying to write pop punk for Sum 41. I was asked in the pandemic to write songs for other people, and they wanted pop punk. And I thought, man, I don't know how to do that anymore. I haven't done that in 15 years. I mean, I'll try. And so I focused on it, and it just came out like that. And I realized I liked that stuff, and I still could write that stuff. But I hadn't focused on it. So, you know, when I started writing that stuff, I found that I actually really enjoyed it still. I thought I didn't. I thought I didn't really care about that kind of music anymore. But when I had those songs, I was like, yeah, I actually really enjoy this. I'm excited to play these songs live.
It's funny how pop punk is still like it's still a massive genre. Like genres have come and gone over the years, mm-hmm. like in 5 year cycles. But like, I don't know, I meet 14, 15 year olds, like friends of my nephew and stuff like that. And they still love pop punk.
Yeah. I think it's just got a lot of energy. The way you started up this whole thing of where it makes you feel free. I think it has that rebellion, that freedom, that energy, that just that youth energy, you know, and it speaks to a generation, an age group, and you just kind of get into it. Every age group. See, for us, I've always noticed over the years, like the front row of our shows has never looked any different. It always looks the same. It's always teenagers in front. It hasn't gotten older over the years.
Right.
I think there's older people at the back, but the front row, as far as I can see, has looked the same since Does This Look Infected.
Oh, interesting. So like the people like me, we're in the back with the beer in our hands.
Yeah.
But the 14-year-old version of me is still in the front row.
Yeah, yeah. All teenagers, you know, like anywhere from 14 to 19 or 20 is all front row.
Oh, man.
As far as I can see, it's, that's the age group. And then, yeah, older people at the back.
By the way, no band gets that. That's wild. That's crazy. Okay, so we're going to go out on a song from the Hell side of the record. We're going to play How the End Begins. Derek, I'm not like a fortune teller. I don't have a crystal ball. But when I read some of these lyrics, like, now it's the end, we can't get it back, why doesn't anything good ever last? I don't know, I saw something there. Now it's the end, we can't get it back, why doesn't
anything good ever last? I gave it all my good. Well, I mean, that kind of sums up how I was feeling, why I needed to walk away from the band. You know, that's where I was at. That song to me is the perfect ending to this album.
Why?
Well, because it explains my mindset of how I feel about the band and where I was at. you know, of this is why I'm walking away.
Derek, I got to tell you, what a joy it was to finally get the chance to talk to you. And I'm glad we're going to get a chance to talk again in the next few months. But congratulations on the record. Congratulations on an amazing run, really kind of changing Canadian music forever. And thanks for making the time for us today.
Well, thank you very much. Thanks for the kind words.
This is Sum 41 with How the End Begins.
Sometimes I wonder if I have enough to say, or am I just an echo, reflection of yesterday, or caught between a memory and visions of what.
That's a little bit of How the End Begins from Sum 41 from their final album, Heaven and Hell. Thanks so much to Derek from Sum 41 for talking a little bit about why it was time to end the band. Looking forward to having him back in the fall for a longer conversation about the legacy and the story of Sum 41. I don't really know anything about that band, for as much as I know all of the words to a few of their songs. You can find Sum 41's new album everywhere now. The other conversation we have up today is with Leanne Toshko-Simpson, who wrote this book that I think I've seen like five people reading in the past 3 days, which is a good sign. It's kind of like seeing, you know, when you have a car and you start seeing your car everywhere you go. It's kind of like that. It's a really beautiful book. It's a romantic comedy set coming out of a psychiatric facility. I'll see you soon. Later on.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.